You're listening to episode 54 of the Mad Chatters podcast, October 7th, 2015.
Most everyone's mad here.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Mad Chatters podcast, your very important date with the happenings at Walt Disney World and around the Disney universe. My name is Derek, and I'm joined by my fellow host, Jeremy.
How many cups of sugar does it take to get to the moon?
Unfortunately, Matthew is not able to join us today, but hopefully we can still put on a good show without him, and of course we'll look forward to his return. This show is going to be a little bit different. We're just going to talk about some of the news items that came out this week that have Twitter all abuzz. If you're not part of Disney Twitter, then let us inform you of what has been happening.
Consider yourself fortunate.
Oh, yeah, for real. For better or worse, we are part of it, and we get to see it all go down. But before we talk about that, I want to bring up something that we mentioned several times on this show before it aired, and that was the American Experience documentary on PBS about Walt Disney. But now that we're a few weeks out and we've both watched it, I want to get your take. Just first, we can just start with like general observations. How did you feel about the documentary?
Oh, I loved it. But you know, I'm a history nerd, and so especially if you talk history about something that I really am passionate about, something like Walt Disney, then I'm all in. But I thought it was long. You know, 4 hours is a long chunk of time. But as we've said before, somebody who lived a life as vast as Walt's, it needs that much time. However, I feel like they didn't always use the time wisely either, as far as I felt like some things could have been longer and some things could have been shorter. But, you know, I wasn't the director or producer. So, but I enjoyed it overall.
I'm the same way. As much as you love history, I don't care for it at all. Like, we've always laughed that that's something we have not in common. But of course, it was about Walt Disney. I had to watch, and I really did enjoy it for the most part, seeing it. But I was the same way, because I thought 4 hours, surely they can fit everything. And then when I took a break about an hour into part two, and they weren't even to Cinderella yet, I'm like, how are they going to fit in Disneyland and the World's Fair and the Tiki Birds and all that? Of course, they didn't fit in the World's Fair. They didn't even mention it. But I guess, I don't know. I guess they just had certain directions they wanted to go, and then everything else got left on the cutting room floor.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you have to make those kind of decisions. But it would have been nice to see something about the World's Fair. But I took it as they only really talked about highlights as far as firsts. And so World's Fair was kind of retreading some of the Disneyland things probably in their mind, so they just let it go.
Yeah. But before we get to some of our favorite parts, I want to know if there were any parts that kind of struck a nerve, or maybe you were like, I don't know what they're trying to do here.
Well, the one thing that I guess I never thought about, but I like that they brought humanity to Walt, because it's very easy to think of him as this idea or this grand wizard, in a sense, who did no wrong or had no faults or never struggled with anything. But I really felt like they did a good job of balancing who Walt was as a person, even sometimes that it made me uncomfortable as a Walt Disney fan. And one of the things, though, particularly that I liked was they talked about how he really kind of didn't have a lot of friends, and he was kind of a lonely individual, and how, you know, when you're at the top of the mountain, it's hard to make friends. Especially putting as much work and effort as he did into the company, which is something you don't think about because you're like, Walt Disney, everybody loves Walt Disney. He was probably the most popular guy in the room, you know. But I like that they showed that aspect. On the other side of that coin, though, they showed a lot of his dealings with the unions and his misgivings about that. And sure, he wasn't a perfect person. He made some mistakes and probably said a few things at times that weren't the best. But, you know, don't we all?
Yeah, that's funny. That's actually the part of it I didn't really enjoy, because of course you have to show a good side and a bad side of a person if you're going to do an honest documentary about them. But I felt like it was so determined to show all those negative things almost to where they outweighed the positive things. Like, one of the very first things I texted you about this guy, is his name Neil Gabler?
Gabler, yeah.
I texted you about halfway through because I'm like, man, this guy seems like such a butt, because he didn't even know Walt Disney, and yet everything he said was like so matter of fact and so confident and mostly negative. The very first thing he said in the documentary, I wrote down, Walt Disney is in many ways a very dark soul. And one could say that he fought that darkness, tried to find the light. And I'm like, who are you? Like, how do you know this?
He's Gandalf. That's who he is.
And then, like, everything he said after that, I was already kind of, like, skewed against him. And I'm like, ugh, shut up. But
yeah, I could see that. But no, I mean, but obviously, you know, that it was true. Everything they said was at least based in truth as far as the dealings with the unions. And that was a very difficult time, because I've seen other documentaries, and they don't go as deep into it as perhaps this one did. But they will at least admit that it was a difficult time for Walt personally and for the company, and that he had the nervous breakdown and all that kind of thing over it. And he was, you know, a known communist hunter, which again was...
Wait, but where are you getting this information? From the biography that Neil Gabler wrote?
Or... No, okay. From like when we were at the Walt Disney Family Museum, they had a section there. The museum put out the one documentary I have here, Walt, the Man Behind the Magic, I think is what it's called.
Okay.
And it was produced by his daughter, Diane Disney. But anyways, so yeah, it showed some of the ugly side of the man. But like I said, we all have had our ugly moments in life. And if we're all that successful, you know, you burn some bridges when you get to the top. So,
well, let me ask you this, because about the unions and all that, it acted like when the strike happened, he just wanted to get out of Dodge, and he just wanted to leave, and so he went to South America. I always thought that was the point of that, was to like raise money for the company and do like this promotional tour.
Well, I mean, they made kind of lemonade from lemons kind of a thing, because what happened was he was dealing with all this nonsense with the strikes, and it was causing him distress, and this was right around the time of World War II as well, and so he was looking... the government approached him to do a goodwill tour, because they were sending celebrities overseas to countries to keep relations tight, because they didn't want the communism to spread. And so they were really worried about South America. So they asked Walt to go on a goodwill tour down there. And he said, I'm not the type to go and just shake hands and kiss babies. And they said, well, what if we send some artists with you and you can do it as a research trip for a future film? And that was what was like, oh, okay, well, that I'm interested in. And so basically the United States government paid for Walt's trip down there to explore, I guess you would say, and create concepts that would become Saludos Amigos and Three Caballeros.
Okay. Well, anyway, I guess it was just... I don't watch a lot of documentaries, so I guess anytime they said things that were negative, I really had to like sit back and be like, is that what I've heard about him? Not that I didn't believe anything they said. I'm just saying I had...
No, I'm with you. And like I said, it was a dark time, because Walt was coming still from the mentality that this is a family, and these are the guys that I love and trust, and these guys, they desire to work here. But the company had grown. I mean, gosh, 600 employees.
I know.
So you can't have a personal relationship with every single one of them. And somebody is always going to be upset about something at all times.
Sure. Well, that's funny that you say that, because I think they only interviewed two animators, Don Hahn, and then the other animator was a guy who left him and worked for the competitor. I'm like, is this really the most objective person we can get to interview?
Well, maybe because the rest were dead.
Or maybe they were too nice about him and they're like, oh, we can't use that.
Maybe. But they also had Floyd Norman on there, who I was glad... Floyd Norman is a black guy who worked for the company, I guess, in the mid-50s, and he's been with the company till he retired. But Floyd Norman is like one of those gifts, because all these accusations, Walt was a racist, Walt hated Jews, Walt hated this, and Floyd Norman's like, I knew Walt Disney personally, Walt Disney treated me kindly,
yeah.
And you know, and so he's just really been kind of a good source to have for all these false accusations that pop up from time to time. Mm-hmm. So.
If it's okay, I do want to read this quote. Andreas Deja, who was an animator in the 90s and late 80s, he just...
And a recent Disney legend.
Exactly. At this year's D23 Expo, he was named a legend. He, I don't think, knew Walt personally, but working in that time, he knew a lot of people who knew Walt personally. And he put out this blog that put this quote. I'm going to read. It says, "A combination of overbearing, quote, talking heads who never met Walt, combined with way too few interviews with artists who did, made this program utterly unauthentic. A huge missed opportunity. I wanted to hear more from Ron Miller, Raleigh Crump, Marty Sklar, Richard Sherman, and many others who had been in contact with Walt. Just to single out one section, the idea that Disney was fed up with animation by the time Cinderella went into production is absurd. He was supposed to have stayed in his office, surrounded by secretaries. What? Frank, Ollie, Milt, and Mark told me that Walt was all over Cinderella, since it was a film that had to succeed at the box office after the lean post-war years. This program is not to be taken seriously. Hopefully, in good time, a better researched documentary will emerge to shed a better light on who Walt Disney was. Walt Disney was a very driven, often impatient visionary who changed the world." Now, I mean, we can take his opinion just as seriously as we can, the people on the documentary, but I thought that was very interesting that he put that out there.
Well, I mean, if I had to side with Neil Gabler or Andres Deja, whatever his name is, I'm going with Andres. So there you go.
His thing about Cinderella, that's actually one thing I thought about as I was watching it. It made it seem like he had absolutely no passion in between Snow White and Disneyland. Like, everything in between then was like, ugh, this movie, ugh. I don't want to work on this.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that. Yeah, to say that, I mean, obviously Walt had a form of ADHD to an extent. He never sat still, so I could see him being not as passionate per se about animation in the sense that he was on to the next project.
Right.
He was only spending 40 hours a week instead of 160 hours a week on it, kind of a thing. But yeah, and it is upsetting that they didn't have more with Ron Miller and like he said, Richard Sherman and Marty Sklar, these people that really did know Walt personally. Because they did have an interview with Richard Sherman, but it was only like one clip was all.
Yeah, they just showed a couple. Every time he popped up, I was like, oh yeah, he's in this. That's right. Yeah. As a Disney Parks podcaster, this will not come as a surprise, loved that the section about Disneyland. Like, yeah, I was shocked at how much footage there was. I'd never seen half of it. Like, of them constructing and driving the trucks through as they hose down the streets, I had never seen any of that. That was really cool.
Yeah, there was quite a bit of footage throughout the whole thing that I hadn't seen before. A lot that I had, but also every now and then something pop up and go, oh, I hadn't seen that one before.
Yeah, so. The overhead shot of the crowds lined up on that first day. Crazy.
With all their counterfeit books.
Yeah. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
It was funny, the pictures they showed of him. I was joking about this with a friend, how... they would be like, Walt was upset. And they would show a picture of him at his desk, like, looking upset. And, I mean, that's what documentaries do, I guess. I don't watch them. But I'm like, that could have been taken 10 years before the event you're talking about.
Yeah, it's all about the spin, you know, how you, and the lighting and the music behind it that conveys the mood.
Exactly.
Well, if you're looking for some other good documentaries, like I said, The Walt, The Man Behind the Magic, or whatever, it came out in 2001. It's really good. And it was put out by the Disney company and Diane Disney, so it's a little more positive. Mm. Also, I would recommend a documentary about Iwerks by Leslie Iwerks, who is his granddaughter. And they mentioned him in the Walt documentary, but you know he was kind of the unseen hand behind Walt Disney, especially in those early years. And so this documentary is all about his life. And he left the Disney for a time as well and started his own animation company that kind of flopped, and then he came back to Walt. But Ub Iwerks documentary is great as well. Oh, and there's one more, too, called Frank and Ollie, and it's about Frank and Ollie, the Johnston, Frank Thomas and Ollie Johnston, who were two of Walt's nine old men. And it's about their lives. And they were kind of the last two nine old men to be alive, and they've passed since. But anyways.
Have you seen, what's the documentary called about Richard and Robert Sherman?
Oh, the Sherman Brothers, the boys, the Sherman Brothers, something. Yeah.
Yeah, something about the boys. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that one's good as well.
Okay.
Excellent.
Because the documentary did spend a bit of time on Mary Poppins, which of course they had a big part in.
Yeah, so. Yeah. And saving, you know, saving Mr. Banks, of course, is sure. a lovely, not a documentary, but a lovely historically based film.
For the whole family.
For the whole family.
Yeah. Well, cool. Well, shifting subjects a little bit, another thing we've talked about, have you watched The Muppets yet?
Yes.
And?
Again, I'm one of these weird people that thinks it's great. Okay. And I've talked to so many people that have not enjoyed it, but it has genuinely made me laugh. Both weeks, well, as we record, it is about to start for the third episode. I've laughed at both weeks. I've enjoyed myself both weeks. I don't understand the hate. It's the Muppets. I mean, come on.
I certainly don't hate it. I mean, I've laughed both times. It's taking me a little bit of time to get used to the almost like mockumentary format.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I'm still invested. I haven't given up on it yet. In fact, I thought episode two was better than episode one.
I would agree with you on that.
Which is rare.
But I was just like shocked by the people who are like upset that they're edgy. The Muppets don't make those kind of jokes. And I'm like, clearly you never watched The Muppets before because yeah. The Muppets have never been like totally PC family friendly. Maybe in, you know, recent years with like Muppet Treasure Island and those kind of things. But back when Jim Henson was running the company, he purposefully made sure that it wasn't only for children. So I like that they're a little gritty and a little edgy, and I like it.
Yeah, I mean, I laughed, but I will say I was taken aback when the second episode basically started with a drug reference. Like, I don't remember what he said, but it was something about cocaine or something.
Yeah,
like, oh, and, okay.
And in the first episode where Fozzie talks about putting up his online dating profile as a bear, and I mean that's a gay
reference. Oh yeah,
joke.
That's true.
And I was like, wow, here we are cutting edge
that's
with the
right.
Muppets.
Yeah. But anyway, both of those things you can still catch. The Walt Disney documentary, they're actually streaming for free at pbs.org/Walt Disney, so if you missed it, you can catch it there. And The Muppets airs every Tuesday night at 8 o'clock, 7 central on ABC, so if you're interested in either of those, check them out.
We don't get a dime for plugging either of those, but we
no,
did.
No, don't.
But you got to support that kind of content if that's the kind of content you want. If you want to see more things about Walt's life, you got to support the things about Walt's life that are put out there. That's just the way it is.
Like I said, this is a bit of a different episode, but we do want to do one of our recurring segments. So I think we should do a round of... Did that just happen?
Curiouser.
So let's just both share a story that made us ask, did that just happen? So, Jeremy, do you have one you want to tell?
Yeah, mine's a little bit of a twist, but that's all right. Mine took place when we were at Disneyland, and it's a did that just happen, but on a positive. Usually these stories for me are like negative.
Tell a negative one. We don't want a positive one.
Like, did that person really just vomit all over me? But I'd always heard at Disneyland, the characters just roam around. Like, you don't have lines for characters. You just roam, and you turn the corner, and there's Mickey Mouse getting a drink out of the drinking fountain. It's just amazing.
Okay.
And we never saw that.
That's not at all what people say.
Okay, but I've always heard they just roam. And I never saw it on the first trip. And this trip, I still didn't see it. Until one day, we were in Fantasyland by Alice. And as it so happened... The Queen of Hearts was just roaming around, and Frollo was roaming, which we saw Frollo from Hunchback of Notre Dame roaming a lot that week.
Oh my gosh. No one would stop and take a picture with him, the poor guy. He was like, anyone? Hello?
Yeah, and he would just like randomly walk up behind people, and they'd turn around and be like, oh, and like it scared them, obviously, to see that hideous face. And then he was just kind of chilling. Well, anyways, we saw them roaming, so we said, oh, you know, I think Derek had gone to the bathroom or whatever. And so I walked up to get my picture with Frollo, and while I was posing with Frollo, I was making a Hunchback of Notre Dame pose and face, and unbeknownst to me, the crowd started to laugh that was kind of observing, and I was like, wow, my hunchback face must really look good. It caused this kind of laughter. And but instead of that, which it was a good face, don't get me wrong,
oh boy.
And maybe I'll put it on our Twitter later, but the Queen of Hearts walked up and was standing right next to me as well. So I had this, it's really kind of cool because whoever was taking the pictures for me, the cast member, whatever, kept taking pictures. So you see me in my hunchback face. And then the next picture of me is looking to see, oh, the Queen of Hearts is here. And then the next picture is me reacting to that. And the next picture. And so you kind of get my whole reaction documented there. But so it was kind of a cool just to have my picture with the Queen of Hearts and Frollo at the same time.
Yeah, it was cool. You always say that whole, oh, Disneyland, they walk around. They do not. That's crap. I will say our friend Jill, who we met our last day, she said that it's not as, she'll admit that it's not as much as they used to. But even today, you could admit that it's different from Disney World, where not every single character has a scheduled time posted. You know, except for when you first walk into the park.
Yeah, because like, I don't know, I guess what turned me off was right there, especially when you go down Buena Vista Street. Like, it looks just like Disney World, the way Mickey's standing there with a line 30 feet deep, mm-hmm. Minnie's on the other side of the street, 30 feet deep, Chip and Dale. And I'm like, wait, I thought they just kind of roamed. But this did squelch that. I saw roaming characters.
Yeah, we even got the selfie with Alice because no one was meeting with her. And she was like, yeah, sure.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So. And remember the day we were at Jolly Holiday, and this is different from roaming, but the Mad Hatter, the Queen of Hearts, and Alice were like putting on a 30-minute musical chairs show with audience participation.
Which was very funny. I enjoyed it.
It was cool. Yeah, very entertaining.
I really did. So I'll put my picture of me and the Queen and Frollo on the Mad Hatter's Facebook page and at Mad Hatter's on Twitter if you would like to check it out later this week.
Great. We all look forward to that. My story, you were there for as well. This was at Disneyland, and we were in line for Peter Pan's flight. And I was wearing, for the first time, my Mad Chatter's t-shirt. And sidebar, I did tell Jeremy all week not to wear his on the same day I wore mine, because that's embarrassing. And then when I got there, I was like, we definitely should have worn them on the same day, because half the people here are wearing matching shirts, and it would have
been. But you have to understand, I was not upset by this, because that's the kind of person Derek is. It's true. He changes his mind 120 times, and then still regrets his decision once one is made.
It's so true. But that's not the point of this story. So, I was wearing my shirt, and we're Peter Pan queue has a lot of switchbacks going back and forth. And as we're passing the line, a woman stops me and says, can I take a picture of your shirt? And I was like, oh, okay, because I didn't really know what to say or why she was asking me. And so sure enough, she kind of leaned back and had her camera out and took a picture, which was strange enough. And then the best part was she turned the camera around and like with this really excited face showed me the screen where she had taken the picture. I don't know if she wanted to say, you look good in it, or look, there's no glare. It turned out okay. And so I just said, looks good. And then we walked on.
Tag me on Facebook.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, I wasn't in the picture. It was just the logo on our shirt.
She may be listening now. Hello, listener.
That's true. Oh, so, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, we shouldn't say anything bad about her.
No, I wasn't. It definitely caught me off guard. And I think a few people in line were like, what just happened?
Well, I think it caught you off guard because usually I'm the one wearing fun shirts that gets all the attention.
Oh, please.
Tell me that's not true. I got more compliments on my
shirt. It is true, but I don't care. You can have all the attention you want for your ugly, I mean, your fun t-shirts.
I need to take that back. Anyways, yeah, so, but that was interesting to get the attention for the Mad Hatter. Because again, that was the first time we'd worn them. And I mean, we're not, you know, the Chicago Bulls. I mean, this is not a recognizable brand, per se. Not yet, anyway.
That's right.
So
that's right.
For her to stop and be like, oh, I like that shirt, can I take a picture of it? That was pretty, pretty bold.
Now, Jeremy got mad when I said this, but my first thought was that she was some sort of graphic designer and was going to use the idea when she got back home. But anyway.
Said, no, she is a fan.
She is now our number one fan.
Yes. So, shout out to you, Peter Pan Q lady.
Hello, this is Carl, and this is my Walt Disney World tip of the day. Did you know that you can receive a partial refund from Walt Disney World if the top rides of the park you are visiting on that particular day are broken or down for painting. If they are, you can ask any person with a little name tag, and they will give you some monies back on your expenses. Also, in addition to, if the wait time for a particular ride says, say, 45 minutes, but you wait over an hour, you can tell the person at the end of the ride, and you will get a refund or gift certificate.
Over the past 7 days or so, a few news items have come out that seem pretty routine at the time, but Twitter exploded over them. And I think some of the opinions have merit. Some do not. But I want to talk to you, Jeremy, to see what you think about some of these things, because we haven't really talked about them. One we mentioned last week, and I'll get to that in a second. But the first one is something that happened this weekend, and that is the price of annual passes went up by quite a bit.
I was going to say, not only went up, skyrocketed.
They really did. One of them we'll talk about went up 31% overnight. Now, this caught my eye because I don't think I mentioned it on the show, but I was really considering getting an annual pass for 2016. I could go down several times. I think I could get my money's worth, and I've been looking at it for a few days, and so I knew that the price was $654 because I've been looking at it for a while. Sunday morning, I see something that prices have gone up, so I check it. It's now $749, which means overnight it raised $95. And I was like, what in the world? And they didn't add anything except PhotoPass now comes free. So any PhotoPass pictures you get, it's basically like you have Memory Maker. You can go in the app, download them for free. It's no big deal. Which I have to point out, costs Disney absolutely nothing to do that, because it's not like they're adding photographers throughout the parks.
No, no. And technically, there is takeaway, because now Disney Quest is not included in that
anymore. Exactly, exactly. Still, $95 increase. Some of the other things that changed were they actually changed a lot of the names of these. So certain specific passes that offered you certain perks maybe changed the perks a little bit, stuff like that. Like, for instance, did the one you own now, did it change?
Well, I don't know the new tier. I really haven't dived too deep into it because it's depressed me.
Well, it's not like we host a podcast and wanted to talk about it or anything.
That's true. But there was the premium annual pass. And this was no blackout dates, 4 parks, 2 water parks, parking. Then there was the annual pass, which is what I had, which is no blackout dates, 4 parks, parking. So no water parks in that at all. And then underneath that, then started your seasonal passes, which had various degrees of blackout dates and those kind of things. So
right,
I
which
had
are the, not available to non-Florida residents. So that's why I wasn't considering that one.
Yeah. So I had the annual pass, no blackout dates, $40 a month is how much it cost me. Now that is the renew price. I don't know what it is from scratch or what it was from scratch right off the top of my head. But that's the renew price. So anyways, the one that I'm looking at now, the one that I saw anyways, that I will probably get when my pass expires in March is the gold, level.
Now, this is a new one.
A new one, because the one that I had is a lot. Well, it doesn't technically exist anymore, and it's more than
right.
I would pay. And so this one has the gold, has a few blackout dates, but it's not anything astronomical. It's just like Christmas, Easter, 4th of July, just random days. It's not a whole like week blocked out or anything like that. I think around Christmas is the only time it's a whole week. Which I wouldn't be there for Christmas anyways.
Right, right.
So, anywho, but it was a surprise. I saw it on Saturday night. I was on Twitter, and I saw some rumblings, excuse me, about parking prices going up. That Mark Willard, who's been on our show before, tweeted that he saw guys changing the signs at Magic Kingdom. And when he inquired about it, the parking went from $17 to $20, which is another pet peeve of mine.
Astronomical. $20 for a car to park.
It's just crazy because, I don't know, you know, it's just like, well, we can talk about this in a minute. But so it went from $17 to $20. And then I guess he went to guest services and they told him annual pass prices are going up. So if you're looking to, if your pass expires soon and you want to lock in your rate, you better do it tonight. Well, mine doesn't expire till March. Otherwise, I would have probably at least explored that option. So which is why I did not. But yes, then we woke up Sunday morning and all hell broke loose.
Yeah, yeah. Just this February, we are talking about single day tickets going up. And so far, those have not raised. I'm sure they will soon. This is just annual passes, but I feel like we have this conversation every 6 months now, which is just crazy.
Yes.
For the first time, a Disneyland annual pass for the Disney Signature Plus will cost you over $1,000. That's the first time it's cost more than a grand.
It's just unbelievable.
It's crazy. It's funny because the Disney Parks Premier Passport, which would be so cool to own, though it would be years before I would ever get my money's worth out of it. But it allows you into all six U.S. parks, so both coasts. It was $1,099 just a few days ago. Which actually, if I bought that five-day park hopper to Disneyland and a Walt Disney World annual pass, it would have come within just like $95 of that price. So that's a pretty good value. But overnight, it went from $1,099 to $1,439. That's $340 increase. It's a 31% increase overnight.
It's just crazy.
Oh my gosh.
And to think that pass, when it first came out in like 2012, was only like $750.
Wow.
So it's like doubled.
Yeah.
Since in 3 or so years. I just don't understand the... Well, I sent you an article this afternoon... And that I read that I think makes sense, because one of the things the article said was that Disney has acknowledged that these increases are not to do with the cost of park operations, mm-hmm. that it doesn't have anything to do with the cost of running the park. They're not losing money on that end, but that this is a control aspect, that there's just too much interest in Disney parks. And so I guess they're, in a sense, thinning the herd, but... The sad thing is, thinning the herd is really, I think it's going to do long-term damage overall.
Yeah, that's funny you say that. The article you sent me, I wrote down a quote where he talked about that. Well, first of all, the actual Disneyland spokesperson said, our new selection of annual passes will help us manage strong demand. So yeah, that makes it sound like there are too many people. We really need to manage the levels of guests who come to our park. It's too crowded, which is just crazy to think, because that makes it sound like you're... that article you sent said something about the 1%, or maybe that was a different article I read.
No, that was the article.
Okay, which it does kind of sound like that way. Like, we want to leave room for the 1% to feel comfortable and have elbow space and to have an enjoyable experience when they come to Disney. It seems like an attempt to entice annual pass holders who don't want to maybe pay more now that the prices have gone up to settle for one that has blockout dates.
Yeah.
And that way they're not coming at, like, those peak times, the busiest times.
But again, I just don't understand a company wanting to push business away. That just doesn't seem that just seems strange to me. And I guess the argument is that the vacationing tourist spends more money on property than the annual pass holder. But I can't believe that either, because Disney gets a lot of money from me as an annual pass holder, and I'm sure I'm not the only one.
Mm-hmm. No, I bet you're right. Oh, I'm sorry. Back to what you said about it hurting Disney. This was the quote he said. From a brand management perspective, it's disastrous in the long term. Here's why. A grown-up with money to spend takes his kids to Disney because of their own fond memories of being taken there as a kid. But as more parents refuse to pay Disney's usurious, I don't even know what that word means, crowd control prices, as more parents refuse to pay these prices, fewer kids will visit and build that brand loyalty. He kept mentioning that brand loyalty. Just as bad, the families that do go today will complain bitterly about what it costs them to participate in this great American tradition. And the more young people don't care or bring home negative family memories, the bigger the risk that the current generation will burn out on Disney. It's a valid argument that Disney is shooting themselves in the foot long term with this.
And this also then piggybacks on the rumors that keep popping up as well about the tiered ticketing system.
Oh yeah,
where tickets are going to cost more. Because I have a feeling that what you see right now is the base price. They're definitely not going to go lower than $100 to get to the Magic Kingdom.
Yeah.
So $100 is going to be your off-season price. If you want to go during a busier time, it could cost you $120 or $150, or they haven't said, but there's still these tiered ticket rumors floating around. I think overall, I'm conflicted. Mm-hmm. I really am. And as I read the comments on Twitter and things, I'm leaning more towards one, but I still have my foot on the other. And the one my foot is still on is Disney is a business. Mm-hmm. It is a company. Their main goal is to make money. That is the point of all businesses. That's the point of capitalism, is to make money, to put out a decent product that people want to buy. So I get that they raise prices based on the supply and demand. But the other side of that is, they really seem to try, and they want to be this upscale brand where only a select few can afford it. And I just don't think that's a path they really want to go down, because I think there's always been an expectation there that a Disney vacation is expensive, meaning it's going to cost you more to go to Disney than it does to go to Six Flags or Universal or whatever. Of course, Universal's catching up, not too far behind them. But everybody always had that expectation that a Disney vacation is expensive. But it was still affordable for your middle class, or even your lower middle class families could still have some kind of a vacation. That's why you have things like the All-Star Resorts and the Pop Century
or even off property. Yeah.
You're going to have guests that can't afford necessarily to come and spend $6,000 on a vacation, but they could still come on some level and enjoy the magic. And if you wanted to spend, $10,000 a night for the Bora Bora, Booga Booga, whatever those things are, then those were available. But now this seems to be an attempt to move that out of the hands of your lower base company. And like any base, it's going to be wider at the bottom than it is at the top. And so, how much of that bottom can you chip away before the whole thing collapses?
I know.
Because you and I, we're in a different situation in life where we're both single. We don't have families and we don't have children. But if we did, I mean, goodness gracious, neither of us are independently wealthy by any stretch of the imagination.
I would say, kids, we're going to the park today. It's called a vacation.
We can barely afford vacation for ourselves by ourselves. I can't imagine trying to take a family of four to Disney for a week, especially if the tickets are going to keep increasing.
Yeah, I mean, I say all this with the full knowledge that I'm still going to go to Disney parks, and I'm going to hate that it's going to cost more money, but I'm still going to dish it out. Because like you said, I am torn in the same way. It is a corporation. I know that things, like, it's always going to raise the longer time goes by because of just even simple things as inflation, but also things like them increasing the size of the parks and them adding new attractions that I want to ride. Of course, it's going to raise. But the second topic I want to get to is why it kind of makes me laugh that these prices come now, and that is because so many things are closing.
Yes.
We've talked about Hollywood Studios, how it's basically like shutting down attraction by attraction. But last week we mentioned that starting in January over in Disneyland, the Rivers of America, those two boats, all the canoes, Fantasmic, and the Railroad are all going to be shut down for like 16 months so they can start building Star Wars Land. And it's like, now you're going to charge us more for annual passes when you're taking away experiences?
One of the defenders I saw posted something like, well, they're going to raise it now because they're building all this stuff. And I'm like, oh, they're going to raise it again before this stuff opens.
Oh, yeah.
I guarantee.
Because that's years away, and they've already raised it twice this year.
Even if it were to open again in a year, they would still raise it again because they would then justify it by saying, well, we were offering all these new things. Because I think in recent years, Disney has always had an excuse why they're raising it. They always come out and say, we're increasing the magic and we're increasing the new Fantasyland is now here and da da da. But they don't have any excuse right now.
Well, their one excuse was to what they say, manage strong demand.
Yeah.
So it's not even like to bring you new experiences. No, it's just to keep you guys from overcrowding our park.
Yeah, and one of the things that was in that article that, I mean, this is a little bit of, I guess, editorializing to an extent, but I can understand where the author's coming from. He talks about how, you know, Disneyland, the idea was Walt wanted everybody to be able to come. And they charged a very small admission fee, and then you could purchase your rides on a ticket. But one of the quotes was, every child should have the opportunity to walk through Sleeping Beauty Castle. And so even he sold the souvenir guides, the souvenir books, for they lost money on them. They cost more to print than what he sold them for. But he wanted that experience of people to be able to take home Disneyland, to have that connection. And you could argue he was building a brand at the time. Okay, yes, that is true. But I think they're losing sight of some of that, because a lot of people are not going to be able – even me, I'm sitting here looking at my – you know, I'm the type of person, when I go to a Disney park, like I was just there Thursday night. I went to Epcot for the evening. I knew there was a couple of merchandise things I wanted to buy, and I knew I wanted to try some of the food and wine booths. So I had $40, and that's what I was going to spend, period. Now, if I got there and the merchandise I wanted to buy had increased by 31% overnight, as these ticket prices have, then I would not have bought anything at Food and Wine. Yeah. I mean, that's the money I had. That's the money I was going to spend. I was not going to spend anymore. I just didn't have it to spend anymore. And so I think there's a lot of people like me that are like, okay, I have X amount of dollars, and I can either spend them in the Disney park or I'm not going to spend them at a Disney park. And that's just the way it is. I'm not going to be the type to say, well, I can't afford it, but I'm still going to go, because, I mean, that's just not feasible for me. So my point is, they're going to get my money, period. It's just how they get my money. If you just want it in a ticket price, then that's all you're going to get it from. Then I'm going to be swinging by Burger King on the way through.
Right. I may stay at a hotel off property instead of one of your hotels.
Uh-huh. And I'm the type, again, I can't think I'm the surely I'm not the only one. As an annual pass holder, I spend money every time I'm in the park. I'm buying food. I'm buying merchandise. Maybe there's been one or two times, but it's rare that I just walk in the park and leave with nothing. Rare. So they're not losing money on me.
Yeah. But let's get to the other thing that had Twitter all abuzz this week, and that is those closings that we talked about in Disneyland. We kind of briefly mentioned it as a news item last week, because it's important to know that so many parts of Disneyland are going to be closed, because I think that's a good indicator of what's going to happen in Hollywood Studios. Probably these things will be closed for a while as they start construction. But people aren't too happy with this.
And their minds.
It's crazy. I mean, they're putting out petitions to say, you know, stop this from happening. Let's save Rivers of America. And one of the reasons is because Disneyland officially confirmed that Rivers of America and the railroad, when they reopen, will be a little bit different. The railroad is going to be redirected just a little bit back there in that northwest corner, so that way it won't bump into Star Wars land. The Rivers of America is going to be drained for a few months, and when they refill it, it also will have kind of a different route, which means Tom Sawyer Island, which when it reopens, and it will, they've said, will be a little bit smaller, but people admit that that back half isn't really used. Anyway, that's beside the point. But people are saying, how can you do this? This was Walt. It's been like that for 60 years. How can you reroute the railroad and give it an entirely new track, all for one franchise, Star Wars? And I think it kind of goes back to them just being angry that Star Wars Land is being put in Disneyland rather than Disney California Adventure.
Yeah.
Again, I give merit to both sides. I really do. But I want to know your thoughts about this whole Rivers of America Railroad thing. Are those untouchable? Like, some people have said that these should not change because that's what they think of when they think of Disneyland.
No, I think they're untouchable in the sense of that they should not be removed entirely. I would be very upset if they were going to pave over all of that and just say, you know, goodbye. Are they untouchable in the sense that they can't be altered? Of course not. I mean, if you had that kind of mindset, we wouldn't have Big Thunder Mountain, or we wouldn't have, you know, things like that, Space Mountain per se, because these are all things that came after the park was originally there, and they had to displace something in order to put it there. Now, I do understand, I sympathize with the idea, especially if you're not hot on Star Wars Land, of them intruding on the back half there of Frontierland, because it really is amazing. Especially, we rode the Mark Twain for the first time this past Disneyland trip. It really is amazing how you are in the middle of Anaheim, and yet you get back there on that riverboat, and you're in the Mississippi. I mean, you're a million miles away from anything, and you're just expecting Tom and Huck to pop up. So there is some charm back there, but I think it's going to be okay. I really do.
Yeah. Like, it's funny. A lot of people complain just about these attractions being closed for a year, despite the fact that they'll change when they open. They're just mad that they're going to be closed. And it's like, well, I mean, if they're going to build new stuff, they've got to close something for a little bit. Like, you can't expect them to just work around everything.
Exactly.
Someone was saying they did the math and they said it'll be like 3,000 riders per hour that they're taking away with all these closings, because the railroad, you know, can take quite a few people on board, and the Mark Twain and all that. And I'm like, that's true. That means the other attractions will be more crowded, but I don't really see a way around it.
No, you have to. I mean, that's just life, you know. Yeah. It's not Sim City where you can't just pop things up overnight. I'm okay with that. I do, though, understand the idea of being upset, especially if you are a big Frontierland or Tom Sawyer Island fan, or if you really enjoy that area, I can understand how it would be upsetting. But hey, at least it's not closing all the way. At least you're not getting a maelstrom where it's wiped out all the way.
Yeah, no, totally. I think they're getting off a little lucky that they're adding 14 acres to Disneyland, which is already so limited on free space. That's why they haven't had an e-ticket attraction since 1995, because they're like, where would we put it? I think they got off kind of lucky that the only thing they're actually removing is that Big Thunder Ranch area, which is like a barbecue restaurant and then like a petting zoo, basically. That's all they're losing. They're not losing attractions.
And maybe they'll move the goats to Tom Sawyer Island. Just let the goats run there.
Who knows? Or put them on the Mark Twain, like a top floor petting zoo. But anyway, I'm just saying, like, they're kind of lucky that that's all they're removing. But on the other side, I will say it's easier for me to say these things because in Disney World, we're getting Star Wars Land in Hollywood Studios, where it A, fits, and B, where just anything at all is desperately needed. I think if I lived on the West Coast, I would be a little bit more protected. Like, think if this went in Magic Kingdom. I think I would be a little... What? I don't know how I feel about this.
Yeah, I see that. But on the other hand, I'm still not totally attached to Magic Kingdom's Rivers of America, that it would bother me that they were being rerouted or drained for a time.
See, I've never even ridden the boat that goes around Rivers of America. But just like knowing it's there and giving it that Frontierland, Liberty Square feel, I think I would have a bit of a problem if they spent 14 acres on one franchise. I do like Star Wars, but imagine for those people who are like so over Star Wars, like the people who are over Frozen. I'm sure there are people who are over Star Wars in the same way. And it's like 14 acres.
But you picked the wrong company. It's a bad year for you if you're over Star Wars already.
No, that's true. But that's what I want to talk about for a little bit is like this whole franchise thing. Like, is this the future of Disney parks franchises? Because you think Toy Story Land's coming, Star Wars Land is coming, Cars Land was a huge success, so why won't they keep doing these things? They might as well. Is Marvel in the future?
Yeah, I mean, the argument there would be, would Walt have done the same thing if Walt had access to such franchises? Part of me says yes, because he did kind of do this in a sense of, when you look at Disneyland's opening, he had Davy Crockett there in Frontierland, and I'm sure there was a segment of the population that just associated all of Frontierland with Davy Crockett.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, so I can't say that he wouldn't, but I do understand this idea of not limiting yourself, because it does seem to stifle the park creativity. And there's people, I'm the type that I love all aspects of the company. I love the films. I love all that. And you and Matt have expressed that that's not necessarily totally your all's thing. You all tend to enjoy the parks as they are. Mm-hmm. So as somebody who only loves the parks for the parks, which is fine, I can understand how that would be a fearful thing of there's not going to be any creativity subjected just to the parks.
Right. I mean, you look at every one of those lands, and they all have some sort of original attraction that has nothing to do with the film franchise. Whether it's a small world in Fantasyland or Space Mountain in Tomorrowland, they all have that. And so, I don't know, just moving in on those things with Star Wars Land. Don't get me wrong, I'm super excited for it, especially at Disney World, but it does kind of make you think, okay, but what does this mean for the future?
I think it would be great. Maybe they could calm some of the fears with this if they move Star Tours and Disneyland out of Tomorrowland, where it currently is.
They need to, yeah.
And then put there a great original attraction that's going to kind of harken back maybe to some of those old Tomorrowland rides or attractions that people would love.
Yeah. Yeah.
Open that with Star Wars Land.
I think it would help relieve a lot of these criticizers' fears if you said, but we are adding in the original attraction too.
I mean, what was the last original attraction to go into Disneyland? Because you said the last e-ticket was Indiana Jones, which is certainly not an original.
That's true.
I couldn't even tell you.
I mean, maybe Big Thunder Mountain or Splash. No, I mean, Splash isn't. I mean, I guess Splash is original, but kind of like halfway original.
It's original in the sense that people probably hadn't seen the film that it was based on and they thought it was original, but it's not original contents as far as that's a Disney park thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So probably Big Thunder Mountain was the last one.
Man, that's crazy. But like I said, I mean, they're short on space and now it's like, but forget all that. We have 14 acres and we're going to spend on Star Wars Land. But oh my gosh, I think this would look so great in Disney California Adventure. I mean, that's another story. I think that park's really hit its stride now and maybe they didn't want to mess with that, but...
Well, you don't want to send in the cranes in a park that just got rid of the cranes.
Yeah, no,
so,
I know.
You know.
I know. I get it. But think about Magic Kingdom or just Walt Disney World in general. What, personally, Jeremy, do you think is untouchable? Like, what would they have to do? What would they have to replace with the franchise for you to be like, whoa.
Oh my gosh. At the Magic Kingdom?
Uh-huh.
Well, I think removing in its entirety any of the lands that are currently there would definitely, like, if they came in and said, we're going to be wiping out Adventureland as a whole, that would be a line for me. Mm. I can't really think that one attraction would be a line for me. I don't know. I would be upset, but on the other hand, I kind of trust the company in the sense of I know that the things that are sacred to me would be replaced with better things. Well, then on the other hand, I think about the way they replaced Enchanted Tiki Room with under new management.
Yeah, that's true.
So I've been burned before. Jungle Cruise obviously is untouchable.
Yeah.
I would say Tiki Room is untouchable for me personally.
Would touch Adventureland. I mean, I think probably the most comparable thing we have is Liberty Square. And of course, I'm not including Haunted Mansion in that. But it's like, except for Haunted Mansion, it's restaurants and shops and then the Liberty Square.
Well, the Hall of Presidents, but...
Oh, that's right.
I would say that's untouchable as well. But any of those shops, even Tom Sawyer Island is not untouchable to me in the Magic Kingdom. Like, I would be fine if they did totally revamp that. I would want to keep the Rivers of America, but if you did something else on that island, I would be fine with that.
Hmm. It's kind of funny now that I think about it. Taking out the back half of the railroad and redirecting it would actually be a blessing at Disney World because you're out in the middle of nowhere on that railroad in between Liberty Square and then like Fantasyland or back in Storybook Circus.
Yeah, just
it's
the
like,
Florida Swamp is
exactly.
All it is.
Exactly. So it'd actually make more sense there. But like I said, I don't want Star Wars Land in Magic Kingdom.
Give me a Dino-rama back there. No, I don't want... I've always said I don't want Marvel characters anywhere near the Magic Kingdom. I don't want them... The only place I would tolerate Marvel characters was in Hollywood Studios. And even then, it would have to be done really well.
Mm.
Because when I see... What is that? Superhero Island or whatever at Islands of Adventure?
Yeah, but Spider-Man, come on.
I know, but it's also tacky and 2D and flat. And
2D?
I just don't care for that. So if they tried to pull that off in the Magic Kingdom, I'd be like, whoa, 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 whoa. Or even Hollywood Studios, like, whoa, 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 whoa. This is not Six Flags. We don't have this. We don't just put a cardboard cutout of Spider-Man up and say, look at the theming. No.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I have no doubt, especially from the concept art, that Star Wars Land is going to be super immersive. It's going to be one of the best things we've ever seen at a theme park. And in time, it will seem to me just a part of Disneyland, just like any other park.
Oh, of course. I'm sure people were upset, probably back when Star Tours first went into Tomorrowland at Disneyland. I'm sure people were upset by that. Remember everybody's reaction when they announced Pandora, and now everybody's kind of looking forward to Pandora. So
that is true.
You know, there is an element there where the company says, we appreciate the fans' response, but we know what we're doing. But then I go back to Enchanted Tiki Room under new management and say, well, every now and then you don't. So,
yeah. Did you have any final thoughts about all this? I know we didn't really accomplish anything in this, but it's just like, I wanted to present both sides of the argument because everything you and I personally saw was totally against this whole shortening the Rivers of America, which is funny because we don't even really know exactly what they have planned. They could shorten it by 10 feet for all we know.
And that would be enough for some of them, though.
I know, and they are losing their minds over it. So like I said, we didn't accomplish anything, but these are the things that people are talking about, and I just wanted to get your take on it all.
Yeah, we should have had a dramatic reading of some of these tweets.
Oh my gosh, seriously.
I think that would have been enjoyable. Maybe next show, because people have really been dramatic about it all.
Tears were staining cell phones as these tweets were being typed out. It was like, y'all need to calm down.
Yeah, but it goes back to, somebody said, Disneyland and the Disney Company is not a museum. Disney parks are not museums. But on the other hand, there is, I think, a responsibility that they are cultural icons.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't get around that. So there is a level of responsibility that the company has to maintain these as cultural icons.
For sure. For sure. Some things are sacred and should be left. I forgot to mention this, but you know that your precious Mickey and the Magical Map, our precious Mickey and the Magical Map, is possibly on the cutting board.
I saw that. The only thing that can make me happy about that is if they pack it up and bring it to Orlando.
That would be great.
Nice.
Yeah, but they've said as they reroute the Disneyland Railroad, it's going to come really close to that theater.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it already is really close to that theater.
It is. In fact, the video I posted on Facebook of the Princess Medley, you hear the train.
Tooting as it goes by.
Yeah, what's the item that makes the engine? The horn?
The whistle.
I was like, wait a second. Anyway, yeah, you hear that go by.
I could hear all of our listeners being like, whistle, 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 you idiots, whistle.
And then they turned us off. But anyway, there you go. Star Wars Land, the future of Disney parks, what will it hold? Only time will tell. All right, before we wrap up the show, we do have an email from a listener that I want to read, and it's from Brittany. And she says, hi, Chatters. My family and I are headed to Walt Disney World at the end of February. My travel agent told me this week she wanted to get together and start talking about fast passes. I would like your input because you all seem to understand what is a good fast pass and what is a wasted one. I know for a fact that Haunted Mansion, Tower of Terror, Space Mountain, Peter Pan, Rock and Roller Coaster, and the Seven Dwarfs Mine Train are some of our musts. I would like to know what are some other musts and which ones we should get fast passes for and which ones we can just save and wait in line for. Thanks for taking the time, Brittany. All right, Jeremy, I'm going to throw this to you because you've used FastPass Plus more than I have. So what have you seen like over the last year as far as wasted and useful?
Well, again, we've kind of complained about the new FastPass system because it's made some of the standby lines longer that don't necessarily have to be long. And when I was at the park on Thursday, it was kind of funny because there was literally no line at all for Spaceship Earth. And I rode it, walked on, rode it, got off, got back in the queue to ride again. And the cast member there at the front stopped me to let a FastPass Plus person go through. And I was like, what a waste. But here's somebody that said, I get 3 FastPasses a day and I got to have this. So they got Spaceship Earth, even though there was literally no one in line. So, you know, it's kind of a tricky game. It kind of all depends on when you're going. I would say a must-do for Fastpass is Seven Dwarfs Mine Train. Mm. That seems to have a consistently long, long ride. Peter Pan, again, must-do for Fastpass Plus. However, the new queue is actually not that bad. So even if you have to wait in that queue, it's okay because it's indoors now and it's not as cramped and AC, so it's no longer the queue from hell. But I would say you could skip Pirates fast passing. You know, it's going to be, you know, it might be a 30-minute wait, but again, you're inside. It's not a big deal.
Now, this is February, keep in mind, so I don't think the heat will be a problem necessarily.
Oh, okay, good. I wasn't quite sure when she said that. I wouldn't pay attention. I would say skip Pirates. Skip things that you would have skipped anyways back when there was paper fast passes. I mean, if that makes any sense at all. You know, I would have never done a paper fast pass for Spaceship Earth, so don't do one for Fast Pass Plus. At Epcot, definitely Fast Pass Soarin', definitely Fast Pass Test Track. But actually, I think you can only pick one or two, one or the other. I would do Hollywood Rock and Roller Coaster over Tower Terror at Hollywood Studios, or I would do Toy Story Mania. So it all depends on your family. If your family really likes roller coasters, but again, I have seen the Rock and Roller Coaster queue be shorter at times. Toy Story Midway Mania always has a consistently long fast pass. But don't fast pass Star Tours. Don't fast pass even Tower Terror. I would say don't fast pass that, because in the evening especially, usually Tower Terror is no more than 15-20 minutes. And you know, you're kind of wasting your opportunity there. Animal Kingdom, I would almost say fast pass Kilimanjaro Safaris at Animal Kingdom. Hmm. Just because that queue can be long.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not really a fast loading and unloading attraction. Everest can be fast, even though the line can be long. And in February, the queue's not going to be long at Everest.
And for me, we've talked about this, those lines that move quickly, like Everest, man, that thing loads fast.
Definitely.
Things that move quickly make you feel like it's shorter.
Absolutely. And if you absolutely say, oh, we got to ride it, there's always the single rider line at Everest as well. You know, so you can jump in that with your family if you don't care to ride together. Or, you know, after you ride it once altogether, you don't want to do it, you don't care to do it again after. So I would say Safaris. Do Safaris as Fastpass Plus, and that'll save you having to stand in that queue. Again, my mindset is always, if I would not have paper fast passed it, I won't wristband fast pass. It just doesn't make sense. It's just a way that Disney, again, they've got it in our mind. They've trained people now. You have to have 3 fast passes a day. And some days you don't need it. You know, some days you just need one, or you just need 2. You don't need 3.
That's probably especially true in February. So good job, Brittany. You picked a good time.
Yes, February is a great time to come. February is very low crowds. Now, you will have to deal with the Brazilian tour groups and the Argentinian tour groups during those times. But if you can get past that, it's okay. And thankfully, Disney has really cracked down on a lot of their shenanigans that they were doing, those tour groups, where one of them gets in line and then calls them when they get close and 50 people try to cut in line, or all the chanting and things that Disney has really kind of put a stop to that, because I think enough guests were complaining. But
well,
February,
yeah.
Great time. It's not going to be too hot. You're going to enjoy the weather. It's going to be great.
Cool. Well, Brittany and any other listeners who may have had the same question, I hope we helped you out there. I think that was a pretty good answer, Jeremy. Good job. Good job.
Thank you. And by the way, Brittany, I did not read your letter this time, so I hope that Derek read it to your satisfaction.
Yeah, I wouldn't let him, because he had some commentary the last time he read it.
Which I don't know why. I was just adding some emphasis. I'm a dramatical reader. I just like to dramatize.
That is really true about you. Everything I know about you. All right. Well, I think that does it for another episode of the podcast. Hopefully, Matt will be back with us next week. In the meantime, you can always find us on Twitter and Facebook at Mad Chatters. You know, let's do a push for the iTunes reviews. We haven't seen some of those in a while. We really appreciate all of those. So let's do that.
And also, don't forget our contest that we have currently going on to win the mug. So
I feel like it's unfair for the people who've already entered to mention it every week.
Oh, well, too bad. They'll get over it.
Yeah, that's right. Email your name and something about 60th sweepstakes to comments@madchatters.net. And in just 7 short weeks... We will be giving that mug to one of our lucky listeners.
Hey, the odds are in your favor right now, though, so get those entries in.
All right, yeah, we've gotten a few, but you're right. We could definitely have some more. So anyway, that does it. We'll see you next week.
Take a little time to find the magic in every day. Bye-bye now.
It felt incomplete without it.